Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the penultimate voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Penultimate, Matthew?
Yes, Richard. The last but one Troy Deeney penalty was scored before the weekend. We've got one more to go.
Yeah. Do you know what? The moment he scored, I did receive a barrage of messages on Twitter and WhatsApp. That wasn't a barrage. It was more like four or five. But still, there are people that are listening to us. That is the key thing. And unfortunately, they are listening because, yes, Troy Deeney did score another penalty. And look, I'm still standing by what I say. You know, he has scored another penalty. He kicks it very, very hard. But again, don't think...
That's good punditry.
I mean, that's essentially what... Again, so for me, this is one. I'm all right in thinking that he's just pulled it ever so slightly, which is the reason he scored.
No.
Because once again, the goalkeeper's done exactly what you'd expect the goalkeeper to do. And if Troy Deeney did what he expected to do or wanted to do, it gets saved.
He's not pulled it. You can't say that he's pulled it. I know that we mention this every week now and we're kind of harping on about it, but I quite like that it's become a theme in the podcast. Yeah. As soon as he scores that second goal, we'll stop going on about it. But he's not pulled it. He's just going out there to hit it as hard as he can. You know, the keeper wants to take one in the dish, I think is what he said, didn't he? He wants to take one in the dish, so be it. But he's not pulling it. He's just hitting it as hard as he can. There is perhaps no exact direction for where he's trying to hit the ball, but he hasn't pulled it. He struck that brilliantly.
For me, the target is dead center, literally dead center. He doesn't have a target.
He's just hitting it as hard as he can. Straight down the middle-ish. But if it goes slightly to the left or slightly to the right, that doesn't mean he's pulled it.
So what okay, let's just clarify. He doesn't have a target. Of course, he has a...
The goal is his target.
Right, okay. But still, I think he's pulled that ever so slightly. Look, I'm saying this partly out of annoyance that I've only got one left and I will then have to, and I am a man of my word, so I will, of course, admit that I'm wrong if he does score the next one. But no, for me, again, look, the goalkeeper's done all he can in that he's, you know, I'd be disappointed if a goalkeeper dives because you do know what's coming and I do genuinely believe that you are aiming centre because then if he slightly pushes it, he's going to score. If he slightly pulls it, he's going to score. And more often than not, I understand that if he hits it well, the speed that it's going, if it's above the goalkeeper, he'll probably score. So, look, I get it. Realistically, I think if he actually hits it how he means to hit it, then the goalkeeper might actually save it. But, of course, it's so difficult to strike a ball that sweet, that pure, with that pace. And he pulled it, and therefore he scored.
Okay, I'm going to ask this for the last time. I think it might be for the first time. I'm not sure. Do you think that you could save a Troy Deeney penalty? What was it? Was it something like three? If he took five penalties against you, you reckon you'd save three of them?
I'd certainly save two, yeah.
You believe you would save two penalties?
Not now, obviously. No, do you know what? I can only really remember, and of course you only really remember the saves that you make from penalties. And there was twice that I stood still because I knew they were going to fire it down the middle. And I did save both. So that's my only recollection of actually standing still for a penalty. Now, granted, they weren't kicking the ball quite so hard. By the way, when I say kicking the ball, it does sound like we're talking about child's football here. Granted, they weren't punting it quite so hard as Troy Deeney does. But yeah, I don't know. I just think that the law of averages states that one should have been saved by now. It's as simple as that for me. But credit to him. He keeps stepping up. He keeps scoring and he's making me look a little bit silly.
Well, there's no other solution. We have to try and set this up. The fact that Troy Deeney plays for Watford, your connections at the club, you used to play for them. You now work on Hive TV occasionally on a match day. You're good mates with Ben Foster. Somehow, we must be able to set this up at the Watford training ground. You in goal, Troy Deeney, five penalties, and we see how you do.
I mean, bearing in mind that I've got chocolate shoulders these days, that really could end in tears. We could be calling an ambulance and all sorts. So I'm not sure that's a great idea. But look, I'm game if he is. Hopefully he's not up for it.
Do you want to see it, people? Do you want to see it? If so, let us know on Twitter at GK Union, email hello at goalkeepersunion.net or our brand new number 07503 673020. On with the show, Richard.
Let's do it.
Okay, we're going to start with some correspondence. Mm-hmm. Richard, we've had another voice note.
Fantastic.
It's lovely. Absolutely loving it. The momentum is starting to build. After we had those two when we first put the number out and then nothing, I thought, oh no, this isn't going to work. It's not quite working. And perhaps it won't. But we've had a couple recently. So, you know, we're picking up a bit.
We're going to persist.
So we've had a voice note. This was sent in to us by Under the Bar on Twitter. This is a goalkeeper coach by the name of Stephen Waite. Here is what he had to say.
So, Darlow out and Dubravka back in. Yeah, it does seem a little bit harsh on Darlow after a really good start to the season. But when you're in that number one spot, it's hard to keep it. Complacency can lead to mistakes. And maybe if that's the case and that's what they're seeing, then maybe the change is at the right time. Who knows?
So that was Stephen Waite regarding the Carl Darlow, Martin Dubravka debate that has reared its head over the course of the past couple of weeks. He spoke about Carl Darlow and that opening goal from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang in Newcastle's defeat at the Emirates. He conceded the opening goal in their other defeat to Aston Villa at the weekend. It was Ollie Watkins that scored. Before we get your reaction on the Darlow-Dubravka debate, let's just focus on that goal first.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I'll say that. I haven't seen something like this that often. I had to watch it several times before I could come to a conclusion in my mind as to what I think's happened, because it was odd. It was almost like he's trying to rugby tackle him. Like, he was so far away from where the ball was. It didn't really make sense when you first see it. Now, look, this is what I think has happened. And of course, look, only Carl Darlow knows truly what happened in that moment. But of course, the initial ball comes in and it's very low. So Carl Darlow's position is quite low. His body weight is quite low. The moment it goes up in the air, if you watch him move to his left, it's not a clean movement. It's almost like a stumble. And I just don't think he ever really gets full control. And I think he's got the decision, a split second decision, where he realizes he's either going to effectively fall over or he's going to try and impact the situation. And it's almost in that moment he just decides to dive into Ollie Watkins and just see if he can impact the situation. Because what I said earlier is it made no sense in that ordinarily you would try and get close and you would do the old Schmeichel-esque star jump potentially there. You know, get within a yard and make yourself as big as you can, jump up, spread your arms and try and block it. So that's the reason I think he was off balance, because I think he would have done that if he could have done that. I just don't think he was ever in a position to do that, hence why he dived into him. But it is a strange one, and I can understand why he's got the criticism he has. And I'm just trying to make sense of it, really, because as I say, I haven't actually seen anything that really resembles that.
Okay, well, as I said, the Darlow-Dubravka debate seems to have really gathered some momentum over the course of the past couple of weeks. Dubravka, of course, Newcastle's outright number one prior to this season, got injured. Darlow has come in and been brilliant. Been really, really good. We spoke about it in the last podcast. We put it out on Twitter just to see what people thought. Here are some of the responses. Steve Lawton says Darlow has been outstanding, one of Newcastle's only positives. He has waited patiently for his chance and I don't recall many mistakes. There are much bigger issues for the Toon to sort out before the goalkeeper. Evan Dando says tricky one, both fab keepers on their day. Dubravka has the capability of making more spectacular saves but also more errors. Keep Darlow in for me. He's done nothing to deserve dropping. Ketch has got in touch. Now this is Matthew Ketchell, editor of the Chronicle's North East football app and well connected within Newcastle, the football club and the area, has said Darlow surprised everyone with the level he found. Now Dubravka is back. Darlow knows he's under the microscope every game. Will be interesting to see how he copes with that. At Arsenal in the Cup, Dubravka picked up where he left off. In my opinion, he could comfortably play Champions League football. Darlow should be, he says, in the England squad based on his performances in the first half of the season, plus the drop in form of Pickford and lack of games for Henderson. Should be noted, Darlow has excellent distribution too, particularly out of his hands. Matthew Driver says, can Dubravka play on the pitch? He might be more useful there at the moment, bearing in mind how bad Newcastle have been. Darlow has been one of the Magpies' only bright lights this season. Alex Cartwright says, wouldn't surprise me if Darlow would consider doing what Martinez did in the summer and left for Villa. Brighton would be a great look at a number one spot. Needs to find a club where he will get regular game time. Joe at Joe Tubbsy says, certainly proved he can play at the top level. Would be really harsh if Dubravka replaced him. Can see them wanting to move in the summer. Both too good for the same club and deserve to be number one in the Premier League. Newcastle have a tough choice, to say the least. And Mad Mr. Meatplane says, at the end of the day, you have to recognise that Dubravka is one of the top three keepers in the league, and getting him match fit again to get him to his best as fast as possible has to take priority. So a varied amount of responses there. What do you think?
Yeah, really interesting. So big thank you as always to those that have got in touch. And there are a lot of similarities mentioned there, the Arsenal situation where Martinez came in, did as well as he did. Interestingly for me, and how often do you see it where a situation like this, and now Dubravka's fit, it is then suddenly a different landscape for Carl Darlow. And this is nothing against Mark Gillespie, who's, of course, a very good goalkeeper who's been sat on the bench for Carl Darlow in the last few weeks. But all of a sudden, Dubravka's fit. Does that then change the mindset of Carl Darlow? As mentioned in one of the tweets there, the microscope is very much on him now. And then where you've got historically, or certainly over the last couple of seasons, Dubravka has been that number one. You know, the silly things to consider, but it is worth considering. Imagine that first training session back where ordinarily you're doing your set of hands, your set of volleys, your set of half volleys, whatever it is they do. And Martin Dubravka will always go first, will have always gone first over the last few years. Now, all of a sudden, he's entered back into the fold. Is it a case of, oh, sorry, Carl Darlow's first now? You know, stupid little things like that. But all of a sudden, the dynamic in training is going to change. And of course, Carl Darlow will feel a little bit differently. He's being warmed up by a different goalkeeper for a start. He'll know that certain sections of the fans on social media may want Martin Dubravka to play. Now, this wasn't a conversation a few weeks ago because he was injured, but all of a sudden now he's fit, he's become a conversation again. Now, what do I think? And I think I agree with one of the tweets there that both of them deserve to be number ones in the Premier League. I certainly agree with that. In terms of how that happens, realistically, and this is why I said, regardless of how Arsenal have done this season, I think that Leno and Martinez have both benefited from the fact that Martinez moved on in the summer and you didn't have both at the same club, because you often see that where goalkeepers kind of yo-yo, you know, as well as Man United are doing. I still question whether it's right to have a Henderson and a David De Gea at the same club, because I've been there. I've been in that goalkeeping environment when you've got a couple of goalkeepers that want to play, and ordinarily it's not a great environment. Not necessarily that the goalkeepers aren't particularly nice to each other or anything like that, just more the fact that if you've got someone sat on a bench who wants to play, as much as they'll try and be good characters and be good around the group and help support the other goalkeeper, that energy will be felt by those around them, you know. And I think that ordinarily you look at some of the best goalkeeping departments in the Premier League. For me, it normally is where you've got a set one and two. As good as Zach Steffen is, he's a number two at the moment behind an Edison. It is well known. Alisson, similarly, you know it's a one and two. Nick Pope, you know it's a one and two. I just think that at some point, it's no fault of Newcastle's. It is what it is now. But at some point, those two are going to need to be separated. And more than likely, that will be Darlow moving on at some point, I would think, if they decide to put Dubravka back in.
So I was looking at some of the stats, and I know that we don't always look at total saves made, but there's a reason that I'm going to flag this because of that. He's made 73 saves this season, right? So he's second only to Sam Johnstone on 78. Now, those stats can be skewed when lauding a goalkeeper. I think that Ben Foster in all-time Premier League leads the way, I think. Now, when Ben Foster announced that he had made the most saves, what a legend of goalkeeping, Ben Foster, making all those saves. But now with Darlow in the position that he's in this season, making 73 saves, being second in the charts, if you can call it that, it's ignored because certain people want Dubravka back in. I just feel that in a situation that Carl Darlow finds himself in, sometimes you cannot win as a number two goalkeeper because he's come in with Dubravka out injured. And he's done brilliantly. So really, what more could Carl Darlow do? Yes, I know that maybe he's made a couple of questionable decisions in the past couple of games. But you talk about credit a lot. Surely he's built up enough credit to allow for those mistakes. Because if not, what's the point? I know that sounds like a really easy argument to make. If you're Carl Darlow, you'll go, okay, well, I've just made one mistake and suddenly I'm out of the team again. What's the point?
Yeah. You're spot on. Like, I think, and I use that term a lot, building credit, because I kind of look at it like that in terms of the gap between a number one and two at a club. It'll have nothing necessarily to do with the ability of both. It will often be how much credit have you got in the bank. You know, we're going to touch on Alisson shortly, and great example. He's got loads of credit at Liverpool. It's going to need an absolute catastrophe for him to lose his place there. Similarly, David De Gea, for a long time, you think how much credit he built up. If he hadn't have had those first five seasons, then I'm sure over the period of the last couple of years, he may well have lost his place at that point. But it built up so much credit. So I do use that as a little bit of a metric. What does Carl Darlow need to do? Again, I use Martinez as a great example. Look exactly what he did. He found out that he wasn't going to be the number one at Arsenal. Made it very clear in the summer, I want to be the number one. Is that going to be the case? Yes or no? They've said no, but they said, we still want to keep you. And he said, well, that's not good enough. I want to leave. And I think that's what will end up happening here, unless Carl Darlow accepts being a number two if they put Dubravka back in. Now, look, I'm talking as if they're going to put Dubravka back in. Of course, the opposite is true, if they don't put Dubravka back in. Because then at that point, I think if you're Martin Dubravka, after what he's done over the last couple of seasons, I think he then says to Newcastle, I never deserve to be dropped in the first place. I want to go. And I'm sure there's Premier League clubs out there. Whether there's Premier League clubs currently who need a keeper, or whether it's a team that gets promoted in the summer, whoever it is, there's going to be an opening. And of course, Martin Dubravka is going to be top of the list of who you want to bring in.
Yes, the funny world of goalkeeping. Very interesting situation that will certainly be keeping tabs on it. They've got Leeds United in a 6 p.m. kickoff tomorrow. So we'll wait and see what happens. Will it be Darlow? Will it be Dubravka? Furthermore, Fraser Forster and Alex McCarthy at Southampton. Now, you had a bit of back and forth on Saturday with a gent called Henry Woodcock on Twitter. A tweet went out regarding the fact that Fraser Forster has now played 3 games for Southampton this season, 3 wins and 3 clean sheets. You were asked whether he should keep, well, we were asked whether he should keep his place. By the way, we should just flag here that our Twitter at GK Union is sometimes me, it's sometimes you. So it's luck of the draw as to who you get. But it was asked whether he should keep his place. And you said, not when you consider the form Alex McCarthy has been in this season, but huge credit to Andrew Sparks for the work he's been doing with Southampton goalkeepers. And then a gent called Henry Woodcock dived in and said that he'd listened to last week's podcast and said that you'd said the opposite in respect of Darlow and Dubravka, which is essentially the same situation.
Yeah, and for me, it's not. Firstly, look, really appreciate, again, the correspondence and do keep it coming. For me, it's not. And the reason is, I go back to the point I just made before. Now, a lot of people won't agree with me on this, but for me, it comes down to the amount of credit, again, and your stock. You know, we talk about it as if it's stocks and shares, but each goalkeeper has a certain level of stock, I would say. And I think, you know, you look at Fraser Forster, credit to him, because you think of how low his stock was not that long ago. Then he goes to Celtic and does what he did, which was phenomenal. And I suppose my only sadness for him is that he hasn't been able to carry on playing, because he was so good up there, made such a difference. You know, fantastic. I'm sure that they'd love to have him up there right now. So for him to come back and sort of play a bit part at Southampton, for me, is a bit frustrating, because again, I think he's another hugely effective goalkeeper, uses his size really well. And again, he's showing in the games that he's playing just how good he is. But the question is, has he done enough to then oust Alex McCarthy? Now, the reason it's different to the Newcastle situation is, of course, we're talking over a much longer period of games for Carl Darlow, whereas here we're talking 3 games, and they're cup games, and they were all, or certainly one, obviously, because of COVID, Alex McCarthy, and then the cup games. So is that enough? Are you able to build up enough credit? Are you able to increase your stock enough to claim the number one spot after that? I don't think so, but what you do is you just make that gap between you and Alex McCarthy that little bit smaller. So what it might mean now is, you know, to look at this in logical terms, it might mean that before Alex McCarthy could have a run of 4 or 5 bad games and not necessarily be touched, it might now be 2 or 3 games, for instance. Now, I'm saying this all hypothetically, and it obviously isn't a perfect science, but I think that more often than not, it tends to go like that. That you can sense when a goalkeeper is close to potentially getting dropped. And similarly, you can sense when a goalkeeper has loads of credit in the bank and they're nowhere near it.
On to the FA Cup. Richard, it was FA Cup 4th round weekend. We're going to start at Bramall Lane, Sheffield United 2, Plymouth Argyle 1. And we're starting here, as yet again there was a torrent of abuse online for Aaron Ramsdale after the Blades won. By the way, they won the game to progress to the 5th round, and it was the goal he conceded from Panuche Kamara that was questioned. Now, before we come to you, we're going to welcome the return of Goalkeeper Geek Mode with John Harrison. Just thought it might be worth delving into the analytics to see how Ramsdale was shaping up on paper. And also, before heading to John, it's worth saying that we don't endorse everything that every contributor says on this podcast, right? If this was purely a podcast where we praised every goalkeeper and never looked at anything objectively, it would be boring. So if you agree or disagree with what the likes of John has to say, that's great. More for it. Encourage the debate. Encourage the discussion. The metric he's using here is expected saves. Over to John.
So expected saves is calculated by looking at the shots that a goalkeeper's faced and comparing them to historical shots which have similar properties. So, for example, similar distances out, angles to goal, similar build-up play and similar goal mouth placement, in order to evaluate how often they get saved and how often they leave to goals. So when we look at expected saves, in the first quarter of the season, Ramsdale actually did really well. He saved about 2 more goals than the expected saves model suggests, hence he was performing better than an average Premier League goalkeeper at this point. The problem was his best performances in terms of an expected saves over performance were against Leeds, West Brom, West Ham and Manchester City, which all were actually 1-0 losses. Hence, due to Sheffield United's poor attack, he actually didn't win Sheffield United any points from his good performances. And given Sheffield United's league position and the fact Ramsdale was their marquee signing, he started receiving unfair criticism. And in fact, Ramsdale's first poor performance of the season came against Chelsea, where he failed to deal with two crosses which led to goals, and he gambled during a long-range 1v1 against Werner, which allowed a central strike to beat him. After this point, Ramsdale's fortunes started to change, and the pressure started affecting his performances. In the last 9 games of the season, Ramsdale's form has dropped off massively, and he's now conceded around 5 more goals than the average goalkeeper would be expected to. So he's gone from saving 2 more goals than the model suggests he should, to conceding 5 more than he should. And if we look at the games where he underperformed, we can actually see a common theme emerges. And that's basically that his decision-making has dropped off dramatically. In 3 of the games where Ramsdale's underperformed, he's conceded goals where he's been way out of position for shots from around the edge of the box. Those goals were the Kane goal, the Rashford goal and the Vardy goal. In these situations, he seems to get himself in a position where he's outside of his 6-yard box wanting to affect the ball, even though he's still, whatever, 10 yards away from it. Because he's got such a high position, it means he's cut his reaction time massively, and it means it's very difficult for him to make the save from there. Whereas if he'd have had a deeper position, he would have likely been able to make this save. Additionally, he also has been much more indecisive when attempting to claim crosses. Similar to what happened in the Chelsea game, where he gave away 2 goals by being indecisive on crosses, he's given a goal away against Spurs, similarly, by not being sure if he wants to come or if he wants to stay on his line. So the pressure that was put on Ramsdale seems to have actually adversely affected his form by sort of eroding away at his decision-making and self-belief and making him second-guess everything he's doing. And this has actually meant he's gone from performing as an above-average goalkeeper to performing way below average. So I think in conclusion, Ramsdale does actually have the ability to play in the Premier League and be a decent Premier League goalkeeper. He's just managed to, in the last 9 games, get himself into a spell of poor form due to his poor decision-making. And I think this just highlights how unfair criticism, mixed with a little bit of bad luck, that your good performances don't gain your team any points, can erode a goalkeeper's confidence and actually make their performances worse.
So there you go, that was John Harrison. You can find him on Twitter at JHDHarrison1. What did you make of it?
Yeah, interesting. Always is when John contributes. So huge thank you for that, John. In terms of what he said, it's like a mixture for me of objective and subjective. So certainly the stats are interesting. The bits in terms of him feeling pressure and what he's going through, of course, that is opinion, that is subjective. Of course, you could back that up with certain things that you see. And we comment quite often that when he does concede, he looks very pained. You know, it's a tough place to be. Of course it is. So what I'd say in regards to Aaron Ramsdale, and I think he touched on it there when he was concluding, was that of course he has the attributes to be a top Premier League goalkeeper. You know, you look at certain things that you want to have ticked off, and he's got the majority. Have things conspired against him this season? Yeah, I certainly agree with that. You know, you talk about the perfect storm of when he's had the good games, they maybe haven't been on Sky, or you haven't necessarily got the result, or it's not really led to a positive outcome. At what point does that start to chip away at you? And also, you know, he made another good point, and I do tend to agree with parts of this, in that he was bought for a large amount of money. So, of course, there is going to be a spotlight on you when the team is performing as badly as they are, and there are a few goals going in that people are going to question you for. So, personally, I think it's been the perfect storm of everything that could have possibly gone wrong for him. And, of course, stepping in for Dean Henderson, who'd been there for a couple of seasons and was worshipped. So, look, it's a tough place for him. Now, knowing Aaron as I do, and knowing him personally to an extent, but certainly what I've seen is that mentally he is incredibly strong. I've seen that during his time at Wimbledon in particular. Very different situation, as they were effectively written off, and he was a massive part of them coming back and fighting relegation and escaping relegation with a game or two to go from memory. So I know that mentally and as a character, he's someone that would never throw the towel in. And the fact that he's playing in these cup games says something to me as well, that you know, they've got 4 keepers there. They've got the likes of Verrip, Simon Moore and Wes Fodringham there as well. And yet he's playing every single game that he can. And that will be him as much as it will be the manager. I've got no doubt about that, that he just wants to keep that shirt, wants to keep playing and wants to, I say, play his way out of it, but I don't want to say that necessarily, because I don't think it's as bad as maybe it's being made out. And I know that's continued this weekend, and people will be listening to this and, you know, screaming at me maybe, saying that once again he should have done better with a goal at the weekend. But I do agree with a lot of what John said there. Actually, there is a lot of positivity there for Aaron Ramsdale. I hope for his sake that he is finding those positives and he's still in a decent frame of mind, because we know what goalkeeping's like. It can turn very quickly. Sheffield United can get themselves on a decent run. And providing he keeps his head and keeps doing the right things that he's done over the last couple of years, he will be able to play his way out of this.
And not the best defending for the goal either that was conceded in that game. But they did win. They are into the next round. Let's go to the Amex. Brighton 2, Blackpool 1. And a first game of the season for Christian Walton. Not just a first game of the season for Brighton. I think that is his first appearance since the 2nd of May 2015. He's been out on loan since then. He's been at Wigan. He's been at Blackburn. He's racked up a load of championship experience. Plenty of games in the second tier of English football, but he's been given his chance.
He has, yeah, and obviously had an unfortunate injury this pre-season. Otherwise, was a good chance he would have been number two, I believe, this season ahead of Robert Sanchez. It's funny how things can work out sometimes. But no, pleased for him, pleased that he's back. Made a very good save from the free kick, which I just wanted to highlight. The thing for me here, and it was a ball that was whipped up over the wall into the top corner. For me, what I liked, and the reason that he gave himself a chance of making the save, was that he only had three in the wall. You know, you'd see a lot of goalkeepers that might go four in the wall, thinking that was safety. But the fact he's gone three, that's meant that his position was slightly more central. And I believe that half yard that he saved is the reason that he got himself up into the top left-hand corner. Quick, powerful, got there very quickly, and it was an excellent save to tip it wide.
Again, funny how goalkeeping works out, because you said there that he was supposed to be the number two for Brighton this season. Robert Sanchez was the number two. He's now the number one. Matty Ryan has gone on loan to Arsenal until the end of the season. Jason Steele also came in the FA Cup and was the hero against Newport. It's all going off at Brighton.
Do you know what? Actually, that's another good example. I didn't even think of that. But the fact that Matty Ryan's gone to Arsenal, going back to the Newcastle debate, it's almost one of them for, this is the kind of one where a Dubravka is in that bracket, where suddenly if he is a number two, then you might often see them going from a number two at the likes of a Newcastle, no disrespect to Newcastle, to the likes of an Arsenal or a team of that caliber. You know, you do see that happen from time to time. So you're right, it's been a crazy time for Brighton. Of course, David Button moving on to West Brom as well. Jason Steele still there. But yeah, it's been a huge mix-up this season.
Spawn of death goal, the winner for Brighton in that one. We should start a new franchise, I think, in the pod, Rich. Spawny goal of the week. But let's get to the best of the rest in the FA Cup. We had a few tweets in suggesting Alisson didn't receive enough flack for being beaten on his side at the free kick from Bruno Fernandes, Manchester United beating Liverpool at the weekend. To be fair, after the game, Shearer did say that Alisson should save it as it was on his side. Should he?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a big one on this, so I'm not going to turn around now and change the opinion that I've always given, which is I do think if it's on a goalkeeper's side, most of the time it should be saved, unless you get the odd one that dips into the top corner with pace and it's just such a good strike. I'll tell you what I would say about this one was the body shape of Fernandes. I think that's what's done Alisson, because if you watch it in super slow motion, as he's about to strike the ball, if you didn't know where the ball was going, you'd say that it was going up and down over the wall because of the shape of his body. And it's incredible what he does with his leg in order to get it to go into the other corner with the shape that he gets on the ball at the same time. So Alisson's movement, if you watch ever so slightly, he puts the weight on his right leg because he's reading his body shape. But of course, the ball does completely the opposite and goes back to his left. And at that point, he can't get back quick enough and make the save. So it's one that he'll certainly look at and feel that he could have done a bit better with. Again, I always try and explain what might be going through the goalkeeper's mind and why they do what they do. For me, it was that incredible free kick in terms of the body shape. But yes, I do think Alisson may have felt that he could have done a bit better. Interestingly, and I know we had a few tweets in suggesting this, I know that a couple of people touched on the fact that he gave away the penalty against Burnley, a game that, by the way, I wanted to touch on. Frustratingly for us, of course, we record our shows on a Monday, Thursday, and just so happened there was a Thursday night game that was actually one that had quite a few talking points. For Alisson in particular, look, I don't think there's anything you can do on the penalty. However, what I would say is we talk about those kind of games where things don't necessarily go your way. So, you know, you concede the penalty against Burnley, you concede a free kick your side against Man United. Now, in isolation, they're not that big. And realistically, they're not going to gain many columns in the newspaper. However, this goes back to what we talk about, the narrative that surrounds a goalkeeper. It would have been interesting if that was an Aaron Ramsdale or if that was a Kepa, whether they would have been responded.
A Pickford.
A Pickford is another good example. You know, and that's where I suppose I just make that point that I think, and going back to points we've made throughout this podcast about credit and about this stock level, Alisson's couldn't be higher. He couldn't have more credit in the bank. There's such a distance between him and the number two goalkeeper at Liverpool. So with that being the case, it's not necessarily a huge talking point. However, if a few more start to happen or a mistake or two creeps in, then of course that starts to get dented. I want to touch also on Nick Pope in that game, because I thought he was phenomenal in this game. What a victory for Burnley, first and foremost. But a couple of saves in particular, well, one in particular I want to highlight, just because I think this beats most goalkeepers purely down to intelligence, is the one that was on his near post, where for the world, it looked like Salah was going to go across him. And I think, going back to what I just said about Alisson on the free kick, where your body shape just starts to shift because you're reading the body shape of Salah, he stayed completely still. So then to get back to his left on the near post and make the save in the way that he did, I thought was really intelligent goalkeeping. And I thought throughout, again, you know, I'm sure at some point we're going to have the Pickford-Nick Pope debate. But at the moment, Nick Pope, there's not much more he can do. You know, you're playing in a team that have scored so few goals. They really have maximised the number of points considering the number of goals they've got. And for me, that is largely down to Nick Pope.
Okay, 100 up for Tim Krul at Norwich, but could not stave off a spirited Barnsley outfit. Good win for them. Swansea v Forest, convincing win for Swansea, but the second goal from Matty Grimes. Quite funny this, purely because Lyle Taylor, the Nottingham Forest striker, was just lying in the goal mouth. You saw Jordan Smith turn around and go, "You okay? You're right, mate. You okay? What's going on?"
Really odd situation. I actually have no idea what's happened, but yeah, he's decided to curl up in the middle of the goal mouth and the ball near enough hit him as it hit the back of the net.
Cheltenham 1, Manchester City 3. We have to give a mention to Josh Griffiths. A save inside 50 seconds from Gabriel Jesus. Another instinctive stop from Ferran Torres and a great spread slash block to deny Riyad Mahrez midway through the second half. There was nothing he could do with the three late goals. Very good performance.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, bouncing back from the Tom King goal that he conceded. You know, you look at a young goalkeeper and you think, when they go on loan, what kind of things do you want them to experience in order to help grow that little bit more, to be ready for their parent club? Well, Josh Griffiths in the last week, he's had a moment they'll want to forget, but will actually, you would think, make him stronger. Following that up, then playing against Manchester City and some of the stars that Man City have live on BBC, you know, in the last week alone, the amount of experience, the amount of good that will have done him, for me, is huge. And he is one that we need to keep an eye on. Very, very good goalkeeper. And he was very good against Man City. For me, I touch on body language a lot, but he looked confident, made some good saves, really impressed.
Commentary corner. He's back, Kepa Arrizabalaga. We just want him to have a quiet game, Rich. We just want him to coast on through. Not have anything to talk about. It doesn't ever seem to be the case at the minute.
No, frustrating one. And again, this is the subject of this week's commentary corner.
It is indeed. Mason Mount and a few other Chelsea players threw their hands up. Both Danny Murphy and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank suggested Frank Lampard, who I believe, as of recording this, is no longer the Chelsea manager. Is that right?
It sounds like it. Apparently any minute now he'll be replaced.
Okay, well, Frank Lampard didn't really even want to play him, and Karen Carney said he simply had to be saving that. We're talking about the goal conceded from Luton's Jordan Clark on the half hour mark. Carney, she said, we already know he's quite nervous at times. This was actually before the goal was conceded. She said that we already know he's quite nervous at times, Kepa, so don't put him under pressure in the opening 3 or 4 minutes. I think that's fair enough. Christensen had given him a pretty dodgy back pass, and she was just flagging the fact that you probably don't want to be doing that in the opening few minutes. When he conceded the goal, look, she said. Now, a lot of pundits I've noticed have started to say this. Jimmy Floyd said it as well at halftime. Look, this is what I want to say about the goalkeeper. Just look. Carney said, look, Kepa's got to do better. It is a bit of a slippy surface, but I think the keeper of his standards has to be saving that. Big mistake. Doesn't help when he does play. He does make these errors. Later on, she said, it's a massive mistake. Really, really poor. He might say, I was blocked with my view from Zuma, but I'm sorry. You've got to be saving that. You've got to be alert. Credit to Clark. Keeps it low and makes it difficult for him. At half time, Danny Murphy said he should have saved it. No doubt about that. Too often with him, isn't it? I'm not sure that Frank even wants to play him. It's not a bad strike from Clark, but it's not with any velocity. And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank said, for me, he needs to save this. I'm sorry, but I think he sees enough of the ball of the player. What is the player going to do there? He's going to hit the ball. Brilliant.
Great stuff. Right, where do we start? I'll tell you where I'll start, actually. It's people that say, look, Here's one for you. A little NLP gem for you. People that say look, they're normally quite visual people, Matthew. People that say listen, because people do that also, will also be quite auditory, I believe. So there you go. That's my little useless fact for the day. How's that?
I've noticed from listening back to podcasts that I say listen quite a lot.
Yeah, because again, podcast is your medium for taking information. So that makes sense. There
That's
you go.
Why I'm auditory.
You're welcome. Wow, you're
okay.
welcome.
Thank you.
My pearls of wisdom. Okay, where do I stand on this? Look. There you go. I've just done it myself. Right, where do I stand on this? I don't know what else I can say now. I think he can do better. Yes, I do. I know David James really stood up for him on Twitter. The one point I'll make is the way in which he ends up in the goal, which is effectively sat down, which to me then suggests that his body weight was on his heels as opposed to being on his toes. Now, I think it's a small detail, but I think it would have made a big difference in this. You know, your goalkeeper coach will more often than not say to you, body weight on your toes, dive forwards where possible. And ordinarily, as a rule of thumb, that would be the case. Now, he's had to shift into position. He's actually taken up a really good position. When the ball's played inside, he then shifts towards his near post. And I don't think he quite executes the set in the way that he'd want to. Because imagine, if his body weight is forward, it's that much easier to get your hands down and make the save. Or go with your feet and make the save, if that's your preference. And it just felt like his body weight was ever so slightly back. And that being the case, when he does get down, he isn't able to get the purchase on the ball and ends up sitting down effectively. So yeah, look, it's not a horrendous error, but it is an error. And once again, when it squirms through you like that and it goes in at such a slow pace, then naturally it looks that little bit worse. That all being said, I really want to highlight the save he made later in the game. Now, I know I'm always one to look for positives, but this was a fantastic save. You know, talk about, at that point, getting your body weight right, getting your set position right, positionally very, very good, and then fantastic reactions to get a firm hand, left hand, and it was an important time in the game as well. But that didn't seem to get as much credit as the goal that he conceded seemed to get criticism. So I did just want to make a point of pointing that out, because in the end, that was a crucial save.
Yeah, great save. I think the argument was that he wouldn't have needed to have made that save to keep Chelsea in the game if he hadn't made the, in inverted commas, mistake beforehand. But a brilliant save. It certainly wasn't right at him. It was an outstretched arm. Oh. So there was no way that was right at him. Just to quickly finish on the commentary corner, at half-time, Gabby Logan, who was the presenter, did elaborate and say he's conceded 8 goals from 20 shots on target this season. She said that's a worrying stat, a slightly worrying position to be in when you're conceding goals like that. It doesn't give you security, does it, for your defence or your manager? Danny Murphy then suggested he might have been playing him to put him in the shop window. But he then argued the problem is if you put a goalkeeper in the shop window and he makes mistakes, does his value go down? Gabby Logan said, and me reading out stats like that doesn't help his shop window anymore. And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank said, it definitely doesn't help. If you look at other goalkeepers in the league, at the top end, they would save this. And that is where he's at.
Okay. By the way, 8 in 20, and it sounds worse than it actually is. That's 60% save ratio. That's what that is. Do you know what, if he plays the next game, and this could happen, because how many of us have had that game where you then save 8 shots, but you have very little to do, but you have 8 that sort of bobble into your hands or shots from distance, and suddenly we're now talking 8 in 28, and I wish I'd chose a better number because I've given myself a really hard sum to do now. But you know where I'm going with this. If all of a sudden it's 8 in 30, 8 in 35, which could happen very quickly, then all of a sudden his save ratio is one of the best in the league, because from what I understand, most save ratios are in the vicinity of sort of 60 to 80%. I don't think you ever see people over 80%, or very rarely, certainly. So it sounds a lot worse than it is. And the fact that it's so few shots, 20 shots on target, you can't really even comment on that because it's so few shots. But yeah, you hear that, and of course it doesn't sound good.
I will just add, to keep it fair, after the game, on the save that you mentioned he made, both Danny Murphy and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank did say it's worth a mention as we were the first to criticise him. Phenomenal save at a critical point of the game. Great, great save. Good strong hand. Kept his team in the game. I was looking at the BBC match ratings after the game, right? Now, I don't know how they calculate this, but it said the lowest on Luton's side was 6.46, right? That was the lowest rated Luton player. Chelsea actually had 10 players below 6. But who do you think was bottom of the pile?
Really?
Kepa, 3.82.
Wow.
Under 4.
Wow.
Incredible.
Okay.
They won the game 4-1.
Yeah.
3-1. I think it was 3-1, wasn't it? Simon Sluger, good save. Penalty save from Timo Werner. Do have to flag that. And I also want to flag Nigel Spackman, because he was commentating on this for BT Sport, I believe. But I was listening to the game between Borussia Mönchengladbach and Borussia Dortmund earlier on in the week, and Nigel Spackman was the co-commentator for Bundesliga games on BT Sport. Now, Alassane Player of Borussia Mönchengladbach put a one-on-one wide. Spackman, if you're a top-class striker, you have to score that. We saw a similar one with Divock Origi. It was a one-on-one. He hit the crossbar. Everyone says, oh, that was unlucky. No, it wasn't. At this level, you've got to stick the ball in the back of the net.
Well, there you go.
It's turning. Finally.
Absolutely. You're a happy man.
Richard, cometh the hour, cometh the man.
Indeed, it is time. You've passed the baton. It is time for the championship rundown. But of course, there weren't many games this weekend due to the FA Cup fixture. So I'm just going to pass the baton right back to you and we can do a little bit of best of the rest.
I'm honoured. I'm absolutely honoured. Best of the rest, which does include the championship, of course. We are starting with another match-winning save from Kelleroos in Derby's win at QPR. First to his right to deny Charlie Austin from close range, then to his left from an audacious Yohan Mbappe overhead kick.
Yeah, very, very good. Two huge results for Derby, it has to be said. Two huge clean sheets for Kelleroos. He looks like he's got a point to prove. That's the only way I can describe it when I'm watching him now. Really impressive again in this game. And again, this kind of feels like the theme of the show when we're talking about goalkeepers and whether they deserve their chance to establish themselves as number one. But you do wonder now the dynamic between him and Marshall. Has Marshall built up enough credit in order to come back in above Kelleroos? Or these two victories, these two clean sheets, will that grant Kelleroos another game or two? Again, we'll see.
Solid from both Daniel Everson and Rafa Cabral in the stalemate between Preston and Reading. Everson actually made a top save, which shan't ever be recognised by the stats because it was flagged offside, unfortunately for him. Daniel Backman denying Joe Allen in Watford's win over Stoke. Not a similar effort, but similar technique employed to make the save he made from his own player in the previous game with Huddersfield. Let's quickly touch on the two Watford goals. Firstly, the penalty. We've already spoken about it, but Joe Bursic, you could see him saying, I didn't touch him. The pundits, I thought, made quite a good point at half-time by saying that it was like he was in the moment. He made a great save and because, I don't know, the adrenaline was pumping, he then went for the second ball and subsequently gave the penalty away.
Yeah, look, I think you have to go for the second ball. That's the point, is that, of course, when you're down there in the way that he was, imagine you're on the floor, you've just made a fantastic save and you see the ball loose. The last thing you have chance to do is look up. You just can't. All you can see is the ball and all you're thinking is how quick can I get to that football? So for me, I think pretty much every goalkeeper in the world does exactly what he did, which was dive towards the football. And of course, the opposing player just gets there in the nick of time and manages to win the penalty.
Second goal from Ismaïla Sarr, an unfortunate bobble of sorts, just at point of impact between ball and hand.
Yeah, just kicked up off the turf a little bit. Because when I first saw this, you look and you think, oh, might he have done a little bit? Then you see the replay and you realise he did exactly what he should have done, got his hand to the position where you'd think the ball would be. And we're talking an inch, 2 inches. But of course, I know we're going to be talking about an unfortunate bobble in another game shortly. This again, if it does that, there's very little you can do when the ball's coming at that sort of pace and it just kicks off the turf that tiny little bit. It's always going to evade your hand.
Thomas Kaminski, good save from close range. Britt Asamoah longer header as Blackburn won at Middlesbrough. And moving into League One, Portsmouth and Craig McGillivray just shy, Richard, of a post-war record for clean sheets. It was 6 on the bounce coming into their game with Hull, but it was an own goal from Jack Watmore. What did it in a 4-0 defeat? George Long gradually showing signs of being back to his best. A good save from Ellis Harrison in that one. Lee Burge with a good stop from Harry Chapman as well as Sunderland beat Shrewsbury to end their Stadium of Light curse. Hadn't won at home since November the 3rd. Both goalkeepers bamboozled by balls into the box for opening goals in Crewe's victory over AFC Wimbledon. Good save from Dave Richards as well to keep out an Omar Beckles own goal in the second half.
Yeah, one of those frustrating ones. You know, those crosses to the far post that he felt, this was Dave Richards, of course, he felt that he could get there. He's backpedaling, springs up to try and claim the cross. But of course, if you've got someone coming in at the back post in the way that they did, they're always going to get that little bit higher than you, won the header and scored the goal. So a frustrating one, one that in hindsight, if he'd have just been able to turn on his line, give himself a bit of reaction time, might have had a chance of saving it, to be honest. I think they'll still probably score, but a bit of a frustrating one. And yeah, the second one, which Sam Walker conceded, to be honest, I don't think there's a great deal that you can do there. It's one of those horrible ones that's crossed to the back post. He's nowhere near it, hits the far post, comes back into play, and the rebound is followed up.
Top stops at both ends in Rochdale's win at Gillingham. Jack Bonham tipping over from Ollie Rathbone early on, and Gavin Batzunu with a great save from a point blank Connor Ogilvie header in the second half.
Yeah, both of these excellent. Jack Bonham in particular for the positioning that he took. So we talk about that. Shots from distance, how far out you should be. This is a great example. One of those strikes that starts off quite high and it's dipping under the bar, which you see so often now. If he's 3 or 4 yards out, he just doesn't save this. It dips in under the crossbar. But the fact that he's only a yard out, he's able to get up quickly, shows great power and a good firm hand to get it over the bar. And you mentioned Batzunu. Yeah, fantastic save. He looked really impressive in this game, actually. Certainly one to keep an eye on. And it was great reaction save.
Got to feel a little for Alex Palmer, conceding a 96th minute bicycle kick consolation to not bag a clean sheet against Northampton. One heck of a goal, by the way, a bicycle kick from outside the area. But at the Kassam, Jack Stevens, another clean sheet and another very decent save against Bristol Rovers in a 2-0 win for Oxford.
Yeah, solid performance. Oxford very good in this game and arguably could have won by more. But the last 20 minutes, Bristol Rovers did put a little bit of pressure on, and it was a shot from outside the box. Must have been 20 yards, arcing into the top corner. And again, we touched on Jack Bonham's positioning. Very similar, a couple of yards off his line, quickly moved to his left, sprung up to his left, top hand, right hand, tipped it over the bar. Brilliant save, and it preserved the clean sheet.
It did indeed in League Two. A lovely zingerling from Forest Green goalkeeper Lewis Thomas to set up the only goal of the game at Leyton Orient. First start of the campaign.
Yeah, good for Lewis. Lewis did very well last season, and of course this season Luke McGee came in and has been generally pretty solid throughout. But it sounds like Lewis Thomas will have a bit of an opportunity now. I think there is a short-term injury for Luke McGee, and certainly did himself no harm in this game. Nice clean sheet at Leyton Orient, who of course had had 3 clean sheets of their own prior to this. Lawrence Vigouroux, the other end, no chance with the goal in this one. Shows some really nice distribution in this game. A lovely side volley on him as Lawrence Vigouroux.
He has indeed. Tom King described as hapless on the Quest highlights in Newport's defeat at Oldham Athletic. It's funny, isn't it, how things can very quickly change in the space of a few days.
Yeah, I mean, I knew there'd be a little bit more of a spotlight on him because of the goal that he scored against Cheltenham. And this, for me, was one of those performances where I don't think he's necessarily made an error, in my opinion. I think it's just one of those where things just don't go your way. You know, each one you're looking at thinking, oh, could he have parried it a bit wider? Or, oh, could he have done a little bit more there? But for me, I don't think he's necessarily made any errors here. It was just one of those days where things didn't go his way and unfortunately he conceded 3 goals.
First game in almost a month for Bradford. Sam Hornby in for Richard O'Donnell, who is out with a torn thigh. 2 good saves from Paul Mullen in a 0-0 draw. Also in that game, it appears as though Dimitar Mitov could face a spell out. The day after his 24th birthday, he'd been in really good form. Callum Burton, an able replacement. One of the classic double posters in that one too.
Yeah, it's a shame for Dimitar. Of course, came back in a few weeks ago and they've had a few victories since. So he'll be gutted that he's going to miss a number of games. And yeah, crazy moment when it hit both posts. It was just the speed at which it came across the line. It was agonising. But of course, a delightful moment for the goalkeeper when it doesn't go in.
And you love to see it. An assist for James Belshaw as Harrogate bagged a last gasp equaliser at Salford. He teed up Ed Francis. We've seen a lot of goalkeepers coming up from the back in the space of the past couple of weeks. I know that, I don't know, it's not something completely out of the ordinary, but it just feels like there's been more and more of it happening over the recent games.
Well, it came up in the last podcast, didn't it? And I think it was Jamie Carragher made the comment, why do goalkeepers do this? It doesn't help, blah, blah, blah. I love the fact that then within a few days we're justified as to what our opinion is on this. Of course, having the extra man in the box has to help. And this is a great example. When the ball does break in the box and you've got that confusion and there's so many bodies, just legs flailing everywhere, all it takes is for something like this, a toe poke towards goal. They get the equaliser and a great moment for James Belshaw.
Yeah, you love to see it. Something you don't like to see is an aforementioned bobble that we've already spoken about, Richard, which means it's time for this.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Yes, we are going to Vale Park, Port Vale against Walsall. And Scott Brown for the first goal out of his goal to allow Elijah Adebayo in for Walsall's opener. And then the second goal, well, the second goal we're going to speak about here, but I think it was the third goal in a 3-0 win for Walsall. It was a David Fitzpatrick back pass to Scott Brown, and that ball just bobbled over his feet.
Yeah, horrible moment. Look, for me, as much as I'm sure that he's been criticised for 2 of these goals, you know, the through ball, which he didn't quite get to, and you mentioned the ball that bobbled over his foot, I don't think there's a great deal more he can do. Because even the first one, watch it again, it dies on the pitch. And it's so hard to read a through ball if it doesn't skid through as you'd expect, or it doesn't bounce as you'd expect. As it's hit the pitch, it's just died. And then the second one, you go to take a touch, and if it bobbles over your foot, in the same way in which we spoke earlier about the ball bobbling over Joe Bursick's hand, for instance, again, there's very little you could do. So I do really feel for Scott Brown here. Again, I know we're talking a lot about credit today, but he is someone that's got a lot of credit in the bank with Port Vale. Very, very good goalkeeper for that level. I'm sure he'll get over this very quickly, but I did feel for him because I think that, again, the pitch has done him no favours on both goals.
Read a stat as well at the weekend. 35 goals in League One and League Two this weekend. 11% of them were own goals.
Wow. There you go. Well, isn't that a fascinating stat, Matthew? I was watching Soccer Saturday. I did notice there were a lot of own goals this week. I guess the good news is 11%, you say. So that means 11% that the goalkeepers can't be blamed for. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, Matthew, if you like a lot of chocolate on your biscuit, you can join our club. This is the Clean Sheet Club. We start off with Emi Martinez, a first since Boxing Day for the Argentinian. Keller Roos, 2-3 since stepping in for David Marshall. Daniel Everson, also 2-3 after joining on loan from Leicester. Thomas Kaminski, guess what? Yep, 2-3. Rafa Cabral, up to 10 for the campaign. Christy Pym, 2-3 for him in an ever-present season thus far. Jack Stevens, 5-8 after taking the gloves from Simon Eastwood. George Long, 2 on the bounce. Lee Burge, the old favourite, 2-3. Jamie Jones, 1-6. Alex Cairns, in for his first league appearance since the first week of October and in for a first clean sheet. Mark Howard, 1-10 at Scunthorpe. Callum Burton, a first league shutout for Cambridge since the end of October and a first of the season for him. Although I suppose that's half for Dimitar Mitov as well. I guess. Sam Hornby, back-to-back since deputising for Richard O'Donnell. Lewis Thomas kept it clean on a first league appearance of the season. Jokul Andresen, a debut clean sheet on his emergency loan at Morecambe. And Aidan Stone, another first of the campaign after taking the gloves back from Marek Steck.
Very good, Richard. And the table, of course, some games not taking place this weekend, but we'll still do it in the interest of fun and games, shall we? Top of the pile still, Freddie Woodman, 14 in 23 games. Vaclav Hladký still second with 12 in 24. Lee Burge, a newcomer, in third spot with 10 in 18 games. And joint third is Scott Davies still with 10 on 20. And in joint fourth slash fifth, you have Craig McGillivray. He is a newcomer with 10 in 22. And Alex Palmer also with 10 in 22. We did say from the outset that we weren't going to include Premier League goalkeepers in this list. But I do think it's worth flagging, Edison also has 10, only in 17.
Well, there you go. And I've got a feeling there might be a few more for Mr. Edison in the coming weeks.
I think you could be right, Richard. Well, we're nearly at the end of the show, but not before Rate My Save. Okay, we're back in Australia, Richard. Yet again in Australia. Do you think we're like massive in Australia? It's like loads of people listening to this podcast.
Potentially, it sounds like that. Most of our correspondence does come from Australia.
This is from Stephen Oreo, who says, "Hi, Matt and Richard. Great work with the podcast. You guys are really starting to create something special. Please keep it up. As a goalkeeper father, it's great to have such brilliant insight from the experts. It helps me to relate to the challenges my son is going through." Thank you for that, Stephen. He says, "This is my son, Carlos. He's playing for Brisbane Striker against Brisbane Roar. He saw it late and the crowd appreciated the save. Also a free kick against Gold Coast United. The wall was less than helpful. Carlos's private coach is Jason Kearton, former Everton and Crewe Alexandra Aussie goalkeeper. There are quite a few great goalkeeper coaches in Brisbane and Jason is one of the best," he says.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, I do remember Jason Kearton had a fantastic head of blonde hair from memory.
Yeah, he did. It was almost like a bit of a bowl cut, wasn't it? Something like that. Anyway, let's get on to the save. Here is the first save from Carlos.
Okay, let's have a look. Shot from distance. Oh, beautiful save. Full stretch to his right. Great power shown. Huge right hand. Puts it around the post. Excellent. Do you know what? You've taken up a really good position here. Watching a replay now, the slow motion. We spoke about this. I feel like this is a theme of this show. The fact that he's only a yard or two off his line, and you can see the athleticism he shows to get to his right-hand side. That's a brilliant save. Very, very good.
Okay, and now for the free kick.
Okay, he's positioned it. You've got three in the wall. Oh, the wall's not done him any favours at all, but that is an excellent save. That is the world's worst wall. Let's just make a point of that. Three in the wall, they've just parted. It's gone right through the middle. They've all turned their back, and that's an excellent save as well. He's had to get down low to his left. Won't have seen it till late because of the shambles of a wall in front of him. But yeah, fantastic save. Very, very good.
Good stuff, Carlos, and thank you for that. Stephen, if you would like your save rated, very easy to do so on Twitter at GK Union, hashtag rate my save. Just email hello at goalkeepersunion.net or WhatsApp us 07503 673 020. If you're from Australia or anywhere else for that matter, +44 at the beginning.
Absolutely. And take away the zero.
In the brackets. Nice.
Nice. Like there it. You go.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, as always.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!